Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, Payne and Pendergast, you're listening to KLT and KLT HD2, an Odyssey station. We do the 8 at 8, 8 stories for you on a Friday, the Ocho. Here we go.
One.
All right, let's start with Nick Caserio, Texans GM. We're going to hear more from Nick about the draft and the process with him and D'Amico at 8:24 on the show today. But here was Nick Caserio with just some general thoughts at the outset of his press conference yesterday.
Okay, we have 9 picks. We'll see if that changes or stays static. But just given our history, it'll probably change at some point. Try to add the right people with the right mindset. We're not for everybody. Everybody's not for us, and that's okay. We're just looking for the right people with the right mindset, that are right fit, that, you know, we think can help us win football games. So not to oversimplify it, but yeah, that's the goal.
I was going to put a bingo card together before Nick's press conference because he's done enough of these now where, you know, we know what's coming on some of this stuff. He checked that one off right away. One of the bingo card items for me, Seth, would have been, alludes to the fact that he ain't staying at 42 and 59.
Right. He gave a smile, like he gave kind of a chuckle there when
he will not pick in. He one. I for sure he's not picking in both of those. Like maybe he picks at one. He's not picking at the other, or he might move from both of those in the second round. He loves moving in the second and third round.
We don't know where he's going to go.
Right.
Would you rather have 2 adult-sized second-round picks or 8 children-sized third-round picks? Who would you rather fight?
8 child-sized third-rounders or 2 jumbo second-rounders?
Yeah, what's more intimidating? I feel like now you couldn't get 8 third-rounders with those 2 second-rounders.
No,
you could get, I don't know, like would you take 4 third-rounders over 2 second-rounders?
If I've got to beat them all up, I don't know. Am I in a fight or am I trying to build a football team?
Building a football team, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
I don't want to move out of the second round.
I don't either. Not in this draft.
It's hard to talk yourself into the third-rounder.
Not in this draft. I'm fine. Like, if they don't move at all, like, and they stay, like, if this is what they do, they pick 9 guys and 2 are in the second, 1 in the third, and then they've got 6 picks on day 3. Cool. Let's go. You know, like I'm calm, cool, and collected about the draft this year when it comes to the Texans, man. I'm excited
for it.
The third
round used to be a real
freaking
out. The third round, honestly, Sean, used to be pretty menacing to Texans fans. We had a lot of like notable guys you could get excited about in the third round, but then ended up being bust. I'll say so far, the last couple of years,
crushed it.
What's that?
He's crushed it the last few years.
Yeah, I mean, Tank Dell, Christian Harris so far, it looked dicey there for a little bit.
Nico?
Davis Mills and Nico Collins.
Yeah.
So, and then Jonathan Greenard the year before that. I mean, that's a pretty good rebound from Kahale Waring, man.
Yeah,
that's a pretty good rebound from Kahale Waring.
It is. I guess we got to credit Jack Easterby for the Greenard pick, though, remember?
We do. Except that it was, I think people like doing that as a way of like, you know, well, actually, let's recall that it looked like it. All signs are that it was a botched trade, and they had to draft Jonathan Greenard because that's where the Texans were stuck.
Yeah.
More so than that's who they really, really wanted. So I refuse to ever give them credit for, like, masterminding their way into Jonathan Greenard.
What a circus. O'Brien and Easterby, my God.
That's your pick, Jack.
Oh, my God. What
We've got alignment.
What a
They all agree that that's his pick.
What a circus. What a circus.
2.
There's a uniform leak yesterday with the Texans. That was really making the rounds yesterday. I would say I saw slightly more positive than the negative. Now, I put out the initial reaction I saw when I retweeted the leak, Seth, of the, and for those who missed it, it was a leak of the Color Rush uniform helmet. It's a dark blue helmet with an H-Town blue sort of old English Gothic H on the side of it, and the H-Town blue letter H has like a red trim, a battle red trim to it. It's hard to see on some of the on the video, but if you look closely, you can see there's little flecks of red metal in the helmet as well. It's a dark
kinda
blue
like
helmet.
The Cardinals have a helmet like that,
yeah,
too. Yeah,
and even the Texans' regular helmet that you saw in the first leak has speckles of like silver metal in it, too.
I think that's where the hard part, and that's where it's hard to try to judge some of these based on leaked photos that aren't, it's not like they're the leaked professional photos.
Yeah.
It's like seeing a supermodel with no makeup and no sleep. You know, like, it's just, okay, it's not going to be as impressive as seeing it the way you're accustomed to seeing it for the first time. So I try to stay away from it as much as possible because I'm bad at judging these things to begin with. I want to see them in their best form. I have not even, like, studied this one other than to look at the picture of the guy's reflection. The flex are what I'm interested in because that's where the professional presentation usually shows that off a lot better.
Yeah, it does.
Than in a warehouse with your cell phone camera.
Where they may have illegally ripped the helmet out of a box to post it on social media. Yeah. You know, yeah, no, no question about that. The funniest replies that I got, because my tweet when I retweeted the helmet was, this is getting positive reviews within my circles. The funniest replies I got were replies from people who didn't like the helmet, of like three blind people walking around with their blind guy stick there or whatever, and going, this, you know, Sean circles, you know, and it's like three blind people walking around. People replying, what shape are your circles, Sean? Are they squares? So that got some funny replies.
Three.
I like to think of you and your circle as like sitting around a fireplace with snifters of brandy
and a pipe,
smoking cigars.
Yeah,
and you're like, I approve of this.
Look at these red metal fleckles in this.
The simple folk will be beguiled by these speckles of paint.
Old English calligraphy, just the way I like it. Justin Verlander is going to be back tonight for the Astros in Washington. The Astros looking to snap a three-game losing streak. They were swept by the Braves this week. Day off yesterday, and now they hit the road for 8 days. It'll be Washington this weekend, and then they head to Chicago to face the Cubs. And then they are headed to Mexico City to face the Colorado Rockies. So they've got an interesting road trip coming up here. Nationals are not great. They're 8-10 on the season so far, so they're better than the Astros, who are 6-14.
Payback. Payback, Sean.
Excitement level over, payback from 5 years ago. What's your excitement or energy level over seeing a Verlander for the first
11
time?
11 out of 10.
Yeah, I'm kind of pumped to watch it myself tonight. I'm actually looking forward to settling in and just seeing what he's got.
This is where I feel like if you're, when you're shipwrecked and you're out at sea and you're on a life raft, a while, the first time you hear a plane off in the distance, you get super excited.
Yeah.
Super excited. You're jumping up and down. Your boatmate, who's like three days away from getting eaten by you, your boatmate is like, don't jump up and down. Just wave your hands. And the plane passes over and recedes off into the distance over the horizon.
Oh, no.
Because it's really hard to see a lifeboat on the open sea and nobody in the plane's even looking down. I feel like I've seen like 29 airplanes. You know what I've seen? I've seen 22 airplanes go by. The 22 pitchers who have pitched for the Astros so far this year. I've seen 22 airplanes go by, and this 23rd one is coming.
Yeah.
And it's shaped like Justin Verlander, and I'm allowing myself to get excited that this is going to be the one. This is going to be the one that sees me and saves me and doesn't ask any questions about where my raft mate went.
Down on the... Okay, so you in your thing, we're actually floating on a raft. See, in mine, we're actually still on the beach because I would not have the energy to put a raft together. Are you kidding me?
No. You went down and you were in the rafts from the beginning.
Okay. Because I'm like, no, man. The most I'll do, I'll spell help with a bunch of brush from the palm trees.
Yeah.
But that's about
No, we're not... Like, it's not you, me, and Wilson out on the boat. It's... We were on the boat from the very beginning.
I got you. Okay. And he flies right over us. Screw you, Verlander. Look harder next time. Yeah.
Yeah. I think my new morality would set in probably around 48 hours if I didn't know my shipmate. I would just basically be like, hey, this is game theory, bro. Yeah. Chances are, if one of us doesn't eat the other one, both of us are going to die.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And he's like, well, we're probably 20 miles from land. Can't risk it.
Yeah, I'm hungry.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm hangry.
It's like, yeah, realistically 3 hours into it. Whenever the blood sugar starts to drop.
Oh, yes.
Four.
All right, quick one here. Final play-in games tonight for the NBA. Sacramento at New Orleans and Chicago at Miami. The winners will be the 8 seeds and will be fed to the 1 seeds in their respective conferences. The key thing here, both the home teams are missing their best players. Zion Williamson went out with an injury towards the end of that game against the Lakers earlier this week. He will not play. Jimmy Butler, Tom Ball's finest, will not play against the Bulls, his former team. I feel like half the league is a former team of Jimmy Butler. His former team tonight, Jimmy Butler is out for that game between Miami and the Bulls.
Did you feel like it wasn't appropriate for us to play Zion's baby mama's audio that I'd sent you?
Oh, no, I forgot about it. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. Yeah. She sounds like the biggest Pelicans fan alive.
Yeah.
Who just is disgusted with Zion Williamson.
Okay. Now I'm going back
playing
to our group text to go find that. We'll play it in the 9 o'clock.
Did she say he wasn't a real man or something She went in on him hard. Yeah.
Why would you do that, man? Like, don't you want to, like, you're not with him anymore, but you do have his kid. Don't you want him to damage his earning power, you know?
Well, not to many. Like, it's like, don't fight in front of the kids and certainly not publicly in front of the kids. It's just like, it's going to be, you're however old your kid is, like 5-6 years from now.
Yeah, it's out there.
Stumble across this on the internet.
It's out there. It stays out there, man. It's your digital fingerprint. All right. So NBA basketball tonight and then wall-to-wall NBA for the next 2 nights.
Five.
Netflix, Seth, is producing a series, a docu-series from the same producers who produced Cheer, the Dallas Cowboys cheerleader. Docu-series coming to a Netflix near you on the Dallas Cowboys cheer. I feel like this is
finally the
10th show that has been done on the Dallas Cowboys cheerleader.
Thank goodness, yes. Yeah. We need to just everybody pretend like that's the only place you see women's legs anymore. The big deal they were back in the 80s.
They were.
The Sears catalog and the Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders, sure.
They were.
Let's pretend that everybody loves women in heavy hose.
How
thick are those pantyhose?
Right.
Mm.
The series follows the iconic cheer squad through the 2023-24 season. So this is in the can already. It's been filmed. Beginning
so
with
it's
auditions.
Pretty glamorous. They're paid near minimum wage these days.
Dude, that's so funny.
Now that
you
they
say
have
that.
To be. Yeah.
I remember there used to be a magazine called Inside Sports that tried to compete with Sports Illustrated for a while and I subscribed to it when I was a kid. And they did an issue where it was about salaries in sports. This isn't like 1983. And they had like 16 pictures of different people across different disciplines of sports and what their salary was. Like Mike Schmidt, third baseman, Phillies, who at the time made like $1.5 million. Like that was huge money back then. Nolan Ryan made this. They had a couple football players. They had a broadcaster. They had this Dallas Cowboys cheerleader. I forget who, obviously don't remember her name, but just some blonde woman who's a Cowboys cheerleader.
Yeah.
$15 a game. That was wild to me because they were marketed as huge stars of Dallas Cowboys.
Oh, right, yeah. Oh, no, they know what they're doing, these teams. A lot of the women, like, they don't have their own, social media handles. And, can I take anything from this? Nope. So good for them. So it's going to be a Netflix series.
Netflix, yeah. So we'll see. It gets all internet-y. We'll see what happens.
I look forward to them kind of looking over their shoulders to be sure there's not a front office member taking illicit video like the one dude was alleged to have done.
I'll watch.
Like Cowboys should maybe lean away from this for a little bit.
Yeah,
hey, you can be voyeurs just like our disgraced front office member.
Oh my God, I forgot about that.
You can
that.
All pretend you're a Dallas Cowboys front office member spying on the Cowgirls.
I forgot about that.
Six. Yeah.
Caitlin Clark.
Sickos.
Caitlin Clark
sickos up there.
Is getting an 8-figure Nike
Damn,
deal.
Damn, Caitlin.
$20 million for Caitlin Clark and Nike. A deal that I mean, almost literally puts her in MJ and Tiger territory in terms of the investment in her. You know, like she's,
I think there's
dollar-wise, obviously MJ and Tiger have made billions off of Nike, but in terms of like the massive investment to be the face of a sport, she's women's basketball for Nike now.
It feels like if you've watched the movie Air, which is about the Nike putting a pitch together and creating a shoe for Michael Jordan. Ever heard of it? It feels like this is their moment for maybe they think, okay, this is how we could change the way people think about women's basketball and apparel for women and everything. So I feel like it's a gutsy move by Nike. And I would remind everybody, the ironic part about some of this is like Nike making such a heavy investment in a women's athlete. If you go back to what it was like before basketball took over, women's tennis was a driver of apparel and footwear and everything else. Yeah. And it wasn't just, I think sometimes people look back and they think, well, yeah, because of sex appeal or heavy. No, like it was Martina Navratilova, Billie Jean King. Like it wasn't just the little Chris Everts of the world and everything. Like it was a really big driver for apparel. So I think they probably look at it and think, all right, even as we created what we created, what are we still missing out on? And maybe Caitlin Clark is the key to getting back some of that.
She may be. I think that, and this is probably a deeper discussion than we have time for right now. What I remember from back then, because my mom played tennis back then, like just, you know, play tennis at the local, you know, the local courts or whatever.
It was popular the way pickleball is popular now.
Yeah, it was
like it was a way more popular recreational sport for a lot of people.
And I think that was the that was the appeal for the professional women. But I think similarly, like Caitlin Clark, I think there's a feeling like a lot of young girls are going to now, maybe Caitlin Clark inspires them to go play basketball. They're going to buy basketball shoes, that kind of thing.
Seven.
Well, we'll be quick on this one because I want time for number eight. The NFL reinstated 5 suspended players connected to gambling violations. I think the interesting thing here, 4 of the 5 were just cut by their teams after the gambling violations, including former Texan A.J. Moore's twin brother, C.J. Moore from Detroit. He was one of them. I'll just be interested to see.
Is there anything worse than having a twin brother who's in a life of crime?
Right?
Oh my God, that's the worst.
Yeah, almost with the exact same name, just one initial has changed. I'll be interested to see if teams sign any of these free agent guys that have this gambling issue. You know what I mean? Or it's like, man, I don't know if we need this. I know
that's the old scale, Sean. Man. How talented are they versus, you know, do I want that?
Yep.
And not all these guys are all that talented to override the
not these four guys yeah. not these four guys
eight.
Jason Kelce claimed on the New Heights podcast this week that he lost his Super Bowl 52 ring in a pool of Skyline chili. There's almost like a bar Olympic games that they do at the University of Cincinnati, and in one of the games they took Jason Kelce's Super Bowl ring, put it in a sock, and threw it in a pool of Skyline chili. They never found it. Nobody ever found it in that pool of Skyline chili. They scoured it. And yeah, here he is describing what happened.
I legitimately lost my Super Bowl ring in this event. They could not find it. This is Jets Jake and intern Brandon the next day searching through the chili to try and find the sock that had my Super Bowl ring in it. We have still yet to find it. All of this stuff has been thrown away, so I think we can safely assume that my Super Bowl ring is now in a landfill someplace in the Cincinnati tri-state area. I didn't think that would happen. But yes, the Super Bowl ring is officially gone. We've already put the insurance claim in, which I think the insurance company might have some things to say about whether they're going to cover that.
100% they're going to have, especially if you're going to tell the entire world how you lost it.
It's the Great Lombaby Games is what it's called. It's at the University of Cincinnati, and it's a competition between athletes and academics. And it's a game where competitors dove into pools of Skyline chili to find things that were in the pool of Skyline chili. And
the
sock with Jason Kelce's ring never turned up after the game
that
was
sounds
over.
Sounds sketchy as hell.
Sounds like somebody's got Jason Kelce's Super Bowl ring.
That sounds ridiculous. Somebody dove in, found it, and put it in their pants.
Yes.
Like 100%. 100%.
Yeah. It doesn't just disappear.
They're really dumb. Maybe they tried to eat it or something.
Because when I say pools, it's not a swimming pool with like drains where it might have fallen into the drain.
Right.
These are inflatable pools that are maybe the size of the studio that we're sitting in right now.
Yeah, somebody shoved that in their pants, and now they've got a Jason Kelce Super Bowl ring. I'm glad you explained that, because I thought that, like, I was trying to wait for the moment where, why did they put a sock in a bunch of chili that people were going to eat? I thought he should be arrested. But okay, this makes more sense.
Yeah,
now.
He volunteered it for that.
Yeah, right. No. In the end, people were actually diving into the chili. That's a little bit more of a health hazard than even a sock.
Yes.
So, yeah, I don't. Hard to say. I feel bad for him. I think that was dumb of him to do. I would never let anybody look at Bob Kraft. That idiot. He gave Putin his ring, and Putin took his ring. Like, have you not read the news?
What's worse?
Have you not read the news, Bob Kraft?
What's worse, handing your ring to Putin expecting to get it back, or putting it in a pool full of chili that college kids are jumping into expecting to get it back?
I think Putin. I think still Putin.
Yeah.
I think Bob Kraft, that was Bob Kraft's statement after Russia invaded Ukraine. He said, my fear is this is going to take away from the real victims here.
Which like me.
Yeah.
All right. Nick Caserio used to work for Bob Kraft indirectly, you know, a couple levels below. He's now the Texans executive vice president and general manager. Nick Caserio laid out thoughts on the draft. How do he and D'Amico work together? I thought he put a good summary together yesterday, too, Seth, on how he operates. And I think Texan fans need to realize this. Like, anytime they realize or they think something's set in stone, I think Nick laid it out pretty good as to how he operates draft weekend and really year-round. We'll have that for you coming up next.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
We will get to Nick Caserio here in just a second. Texter points out Nike's really gone in on women's basketball. The best basketball shoe right now is Sabrina Ionescu's signature shoe. I don't know. I know nothing about the shoes. I know that, yeah, I forgot about that. They're paying Caitlin Clark $20 million. I'm like, dang, that's big. Man, Nike making a plunge. They're paying Sabrina Ionescu $24 million. So this is part of a wave that Nike's got going on right now.
Oh, wow.
In the women's sport. Yeah, Sabrina.
Oh, those are cool shoes.
Yeah, for those who don't know, she's the one that competed against Steph Curry in a three-point shooting contest at the All-Star game this year. Ionescu is. I'd be here to see Caitlin Clark go against Steph. Caitlin Clark has some serious range on that jumper too. I'd be there for that.
Some of these Sabrina ones.
Are you going to get some? Do they make them in your size?
No, but I like the way they look. I don't know if they make them men's. Yeah, but they look cool.
Payne and Pendergast with you. Here was Nick Caserio. Here stating the kind of alluding to the obvious. They're probably not hanging around at 42, 59, and 86th overall come Friday.
We have 9 picks. We'll see if that changes or stays static. But it's given our history, it'll probably change at some point. Try to add the right people with the right mindset. We're not for everybody. Everybody's not for us, and that's okay. We're just looking for the right people with the right mindset, that are right fit, that, you know, we think can help us win football games. So not to oversimplify it, but yeah, that's the goal.
I like to think of Nick Caserio kind of like almost like Matthew McConaughey walking into a bar. So, you know, like all these pretty little draft picks all lined up, and he doesn't even know which one he's going to go home with. He just knows he's going to go home with a few of them.
Well,
he just doesn't. It doesn't. I mean, right now I might have come with 42, but I'm going to be leaving with 29.
I'll tell you what, he looks a whole lot more attractive to those draft picks standing along the wall than he did a couple years ago.
That's
you
true. Know, that's true. Know, like he was, he was like early stage Steve Jobs. Early stage Jeff Bezos walking in last year, to where now all of a sudden he's like male hormone replacement Jeff Bezos walking with his biceps showing and everything.
Right.
Whole different deal, ladies.
That's it. So that was Caserio. Now, This will be the second draft that he's worked on with D'Amico Ryans, of course, last year being the first. He was asked, I think this might have been Steph Stradley asking about this, communication between Nick and the staff and how they kind of evaluate and communicate about players in this draft.
We're not trying to get to a point where we just agree on everything, but we're trying to get to a point where we see players similarly, we envision the role similarly. We're never going to force a player on a coach because it's unfair to really anybody involved. So we're not going to make decisions in a vacuum. We're going to take all the information in. We're going to aggregate as much information as possible. And ultimately, D'Amico and I will sit down and go through it and then figure out like what decision makes the most sense. So maybe it's, okay, if we have a group of four players, we're comfortable with one of the four players. Okay, so then ultimately we're going to have to make a decision there. But there's a lot of dialogue and a lot of discussion back and forth. It's ongoing. We've actually had a couple follow-up meetings once we kind of got through the first wave. Hey, take a look at this group, six or eight players. Hey, can you do an informal Zoom call with them? We're just trying to get more information. Then we'll come back. Hey, how'd it go? Well, we had a question about this. What did you think? So we're aggregating a lot of information, and there's a lot of dialogue. I mean, D'Amico's probably sick of me walking in his office every day, but literally we talk about players. We talk about the team on a day-to-day basis. So it's all about communication. So you can't over-communicate in situations like this. You're making big decisions on behalf of the organization. So I'm just trying to kind of steer it in the right direction and be a steward and, you know, be supportive of everybody and be receptive to, you know, everybody's opinion. At some point, we got to draw the line somewhere. But hopefully we're identifying the right people for the organization. We see the vision. We see the role. But their information and input is certainly valued without question.
So what are you smiling about?
Oh, no, nothing, Sean. Nothing. Oh, okay. No, I have some thoughts rolling around, but you look like you wanted to say something.
Oh, no, just like it's really important, obviously, for the GM and the head coach and all the assistant coaches to really have a real feel for, okay, what do you need in your scheme? What are you looking for? The worst example of a good process gone bad that I ever saw was the Texans trading up to draft Jason Babin. Because I think that Charlie Casserly and Dom Capers and Vic Fangio, so Dom Capers, the head coach, Vic Fangio was the defensive coordinator. I think they and Charlie Casserly were all on board and trying to figure out exactly, you know, finding guys that fit that outside linebacker position in Vic Fangio's 3-4 defense. And I think that Fangio was on board with Babin. I think that Casserly was taking input from the coaches. And it ended up being a really bad draft pick. And Babin, this was an example where, man, it looked like Babin just wasn't going to be a good football player. He goes off, leaves the Texans, and finds himself in a 4-3, playing just with his hand in the dirt instead of playing outside
sacks,
linebacker.
Dude.
Became a sack leader.
18
yeah.
sacks.
Went to the Eagles and the Titans. Also, between the Seahawks, the Eagles, and the Titans, had some really good years. Yep. As a 4-3 wide nine defensive end. Like, honestly, the ironic thing is this scheme right here, basically.
Yeah, right.
It was this scheme in Tennessee with Jim Washburn as his defensive line coach. So that was the right idea. Those guys were all working together, but they just botched it. There's other times where there's a lot of other situations, and more commonly where maybe the GM really liked a guy like Jason Babin. The defensive line coach hates him, and you end up getting this disconnect. In that situation, at the very least, those guys are on the same page. I think what, you know, Caserio, when he was in New England, they were looking at different types of defensive linemen and different types of outside linebackers, perhaps, than necessarily what D'Amico Ryans might be looking
for.
So Caserio does, especially these first few years, he's going to be asking a lot of questions to D'Amico about what he doesn't like, what don't you like about this player, all that, because there's still a learning process with all of this.
I think the coolest thing about that cut to me, and it goes back to something you had said before they even hired D'Amico, which is you were kind of on an island with this, which is, like, I think Nick Caserio and D'Amico Ryans would work great together. You know, they both view football through a similar lens. Maybe they come from different backgrounds, but the importance of football and what they look for in players, it turns out, is very, very similar, but disparate enough to where I'm sure they have some good discussions and debates. And as Nick always says, we don't agree on everything, but they communicate about everything. I think when Nick got here, Seth, and a lot, in retrospect, it was clearly done out of necessity. He was out there. He was hands-on with everything. He's throwing the ball at practice to guys, you know, like he's got the headset on and probably contributing input on what to do on game day. And I think the perception was going to be that, oh man, this is a guy who's going to want to control everything. Boy, look who he comes from here, Belichick, who loves to control everything. That's his guy. And I think what's evolved over time, and Nick makes this point, made it multiple times during the press conference yesterday, is he's just basically a steward of the roster and, you know, kind of like serving the needs of what D'Amico's looking for. I think that's been, it's been cool to see the adaptability, I guess, is what I'm saying here, you know, for
yeah, he's
for Cassario.
Used that steward word before.
Yep.
A person who looks after the passengers on a ship, aircraft, or train and brings them meals. Or probably the meaning he meant is managed to look after someone else's property.
Right. Yeah,
basically, you're just steward of that property.
Bring them linebackers.
You're the guardian of that property and what
bring,
have you. Yeah.
Bring them a three technique. Yes.
I like to think of him as like a fancy guy on an old time locomotive. Yeah.
Yes.
Go get the steward.
Yeah. Oh,
have the steward bring me a linebacker.
That's it. One more from Cassario, and I think. Again, this you've described his style, Seth, as being kind of fluid. You know, Nick, he's very malleable during all this. There's no, I don't think he operates with like a set of rules or anything like that. I think he operates based on what he sees in situations presented to him. This is a pretty
kind of
good,
like a communist leader.
This is pretty,
or a dictatorial communist type sense.
Fluid
it's less about the rule of law and more about the whims of the dictator.
Maybe so. Yeah. But with maybe more input than a dictator takes. I thought this was a good summary that Nick had on kind of his fluid roster building.
The team building process, it's probably, you know, one of the most enjoyable aspects of my job because it's never one size fits all. So you sort of have to be open-minded and kind of bob and weave a little bit and willing to make decisions in real time and also be willing to kind of make adjustments in real time as well. So it goes back to preparation, it goes back to information, it goes back to understanding players, it goes back to understanding the league as best you can and just trying to figure out kind of how it's all going to fit together.
Yeah, I don't know that like he's got like this, these are the rules of Cassario, you know what
well,
I mean?
Well, you know, one thing he talked about is about he made reference to the window or discussions about window, and
yeah.
I think he was trying to clarify a little bit that I almost the way I understood it as he was kind of clarifying window talk was I think he might feel like window is almost too specific a term that yeah you're looking at it in 2 year periods where you might be kicking you might be rolling some cap space into the next year but you're gonna have expenses that come up. I think he thinks that a lot of long-term planning is just wishful thinking, that just things change way too dramatically. I was thinking about yesterday when I think Jonathan Alexander asked him a question about, you know, having Stephon Diggs be a rental because it's a one-year deal.
Yeah.
That's the standard lingo we use for a one-year deal. Okay, it's a rental. But when you call that a rental, it's not like the long-term contracts are locking down a guy for life.
That's right.
The average five-year contract lasts less than 3 years. So they're all rentals, and I think Nick just recognizes that, man, like pretending that when you sign a guy to a five-year deal, you're going to have him for 5 years is just you're ignoring reality. So he chooses just to try to operate in as short-term a scale as possible.
Yep. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Friday. Let's get into this in the next segment. You mentioned agents earlier, Seth. Nick had mentioned a lot of agents are telling their guys to kind of take it easy on the workout so you don't get hurt before the draft. That's one thing. Going on social media and questioning one of the teams that may be drafting your guy is an entire thing altogether.
Yeah.
And that happened yesterday for one of the potential top picks in the draft. It's interesting on both sides, the team side and the agent side. We'll let you know why coming up next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast. Back top of the hour, we will get to the biggest topic that I wanted to hear from Nick Cassario on. We'll get to it at the top of the hour. So the draft is... The first night of the draft is 6 days from today. So this time next week, we're going to be coming in knowing exactly what all the teams did in the first round, which quarterbacks went where, and there's expected to be a ton of quarterbacks going at the top of this draft, including Jaden Daniels of Washington. Now, Washington did a strange thing this week. I think it was yesterday or the day before, but they had four of the quarterbacks in this draft, Jaden Daniels being one of them. I think Drake May, Bo Nix, and Michael Penix. I forget which four. It's not really that important other than Jaden Daniels for purposes of this conversation. But they had four quarterbacks in. Mike Florio and Chris Sims on the Pro Football Talk show talked about this, and Florio was really, as we were, Seth and I were earlier this week, kind of scratching our heads. You're bringing quarterbacks in for a visit. Why are you bringing four guys in at the exact same time?
It seems dysfunctional to me on the surface to do that. And I know that somebody reported that Adam Peters, they did that in San Francisco. I mean, I feel like this is just, well, the owner's available this day and he wants to meet with all these guys, so this is the day we want them all to be here. Why would you dilute your ability to get maximum time and just an opportunity to evaluate? You're trying to evaluate four guys at once because the glass half full story is, well, you want to see how they interact with each other. But you're trying to keep track of these four different guys. Like, why would you not? You've got 30 of these visits you can do. Why would you not bring them in one at a time and have maximum opportunity to get to know them individually?
Seth, are you team Florio on this approach?
I think I'm team Florio. The biggest thing, I don't know if it's for the same reasons or not, but the way he framed it right there, if they are indeed doing it to see how they interact with each other, which I don't know if that's so clear cut, but like, okay, in preparation for what? Like, yeah. What? Like, why? what bearing or relevance does it have how these guys get along with their competition leading into the draft? Yes. Like, I guess just out of my hope and desire that NFL teams aren't this incompetent, that it really is for the reason they stated that, okay, the owner wants to meet them. This is the amount of time that they can, this is the time that they could all do it together. I don't feel like how Jaden Daniels interacts with Caleb Williams probably has any damn relevance on playing football in the NFL.
Yeah.
Like of all the various things, this is as dumb as when the Eagles were doing rock, paper, scissors not too long ago as a way to evaluate guys'
with this
competitiveness.
Head coach, yeah, with this head coach. So, yeah, and Sims, we don't have the audio, but Sims actually echoed that, like, right after that Florio audio. Here, Sims like, when are these four guys ever going to be in the same building with each other after they're drafted? Like, who cares?
I mean, we're going to draft Malik Nabers, but I haven't seen him cook an omelet. Let's be sure we have him cook an omelet because we just need to know how he's going to cook an omelet before he comes to play quarterback with us.
Maybe it's like Survivor, though, Seth. Maybe like they put them all like in a room together and they see which one turns into the alpha in there. Like which one becomes Q. In this whole thing,
right.
You know?
But again, that's not, that has zero to do with it. There's one thing about human beings, Sean. It's, they don't act consistently across different scenarios.
Yeah,
a lot of, there's a tendency to think that like, oh, this person who's just like everything you're looking for in this one scenario is going to be the exact same guy in a different. No, the people are very much affected by their environments. And like, at no point will any of these guys have three other potential first-round picks that they need to interact with for 3 hours in a certain capacity.
I'm disgusted with myself for even trying to come up with a scenario. No, you're right. You're right.
Oh, you can talk yourself into all kinds of, their ability to set aside their ego, their ability to get along well with others, all that stuff. Sure, sure. It's just, it's way overthinking why they're doing it.
Oh,
I think it probably matters more just for the sake of the owner getting to meet everybody.
Texter says you bring all four in to see who the alpha is for sure. Well, that's what I'd be interested in. Like, which one kind of like you give some challenges?
Again, like, the alpha can change from situation to situation.
Yeah.
And the other problem, too, is that 97% of people who talk about alpha males have the complete wrong idea of what an alpha male is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, for the first and foremost, most of like the best alphas I've ever known are barely aware of the concept of an alpha male.
Yeah.
They're just really good with people.
Yeah.
And
just being like, themselves.
And also showing like they care about others, which also, you know, creates loyalty from those other people.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not hardwired into like needing to win every single competition, no matter what or whatever.
Yeah. They're not reading
a
manual.
It's an artificial environment.
They're not reading a manual on how to be an alpha. You know, like it's,
And this is an artificial environment. If you're trying to decide who's going to be the best alpha, when it comes to, because the hardest thing about being a quarterback, first and foremost, is be a good quarterback, and then you'll have credibility as a leader.
Fair. So what do you make then of Jaden Daniels, who was one of these four quarterbacks that was in Washington? By the way, an environment that, a team that reportedly Jaden Daniels had not felt like his initial meetings went well with, if you remember that.
Yeah.
Remember there was a, I forget, it was Cowherd was saying, hey, I hear that Washington is all in on Jaden Daniels. And then these other stories come out like Jaden Daniels felt like his meetings didn't go well and he wants to be a Patriot. We've heard it's lying season. That said, Jaden Daniels' agent is Ron Butler. That is a fact. Ron Butler retweeted the Florio Sims exchange that we just played with a hand on chin emoji. So it's Florio and Sims saying that Washington's process is broken, basically, with these quarterbacks. And the agent for one of those four quarterbacks gives the emoji. So what do you make of that, Seth?
I don't know, man. I don't want my agent cryptically tweeting.
Shouldn't say anything, can we, right?
Can we stop cryptically tweeting about things?
They can't.
The problem is that, I don't know, man. People, when they cryptically tweet, they fall generally into two categories, I think. One is when they think they're being so mysterious that nobody will think, like, realize what they're up to. Or the other side is when they think it's way more obvious than what they actually think. Like, he might think he's saying that. I could see him tweeting that out and being like, I'm skeptical of Florio and Sims' take here. Like, yeah, don't worry. Washington knows what they're doing. But it could also be, the problem is, he might think that, but a lot of people are going to look at that and interpret it as like, these guys have a point here.
Yeah.
That's kind of sketchy.
Yeah, I think, like, if you're the agent, you have to ask yourself, what's the end game with me putting, like, what do I have to, what does my client stand to benefit me tweeting this?
Is this more about me or about my client?
Yeah,
This feels like it's a little bit more about the agent than the client.
Unless it feels that way. Unless you're to believe the rumors, like, that Jaden Daniels isn't really feeling Washington, and maybe this is the agent's way of trying to quasi-Eli the thing a little bit, you know?
Yeah, or maybe he already feels like he knows they're out or something, and he wants to be sure other teams know that his client. Okay.
Yeah, maybe.
So the cryptic tweeting might serve a purpose.
It could. All right. It could, yeah, it could.
I like Jay. Are you a Drake May guy or a Jaden Daniels?
Jaden Daniels. I might be a Jaden Daniels guy over Caleb Williams. I like Jaden Daniels a lot. I really his game a lot.
Man, you know what CJ did for a lot of people was, even though it's a small sample size, this, that, the other thing, like the history of being the second quarterback taken at the number 2 overall pick has not been a good one. CJ might embolden some people to be more like, oh yeah, all right, you know, I'll give a damn. Yeah, Jaden Daniels at 2, it makes sense.
Yeah. I like Jaden Daniels' game a lot. I'm not sold on Caleb Williams, man. Not to the extent that he's this no brainer, like, going to be good, you know, going to be great. He should be the number 1 pick. Chicago would really be screwing up if they didn't take Caleb Williams. I mean, they would be under a lot of scrutiny because of the narratives. But I think there's a lot of question marks with Caleb Williams, especially in Chicago. Like, to me, any quarterback in Chicago, given the weather and given the history there at the quarterback position, is paddling upstream a little bit.
There's some things about him where it's, you know, Pat Mahomes had legitimate concerns about, okay, when he goes out of structure or when he freelances, when he's aggressive, is he just a little too reckless with it? And that was a fair and legitimate concern. I don't know. Maybe if Pat Mahomes had gone to a different coach, like, that wouldn't have necessarily been drilled out of him. But I think Caleb Williams is, I don't know. He's more fun to watch run, but Pat Mahomes is pretty devastating with his legs without being that athletic. But But Caleb Williams can make you look just flat out stupid he's running.
Yeah.
But he gets loose with the football. You know, like, when he's creating out of structure, he can be somewhat careless. And that's one of the things that might do him in if he doesn't get that under control. So it's not like it's just as it wasn't with Pat Mahomes. It's easy to look back now and say, oh, yeah, it was obvious that Pat Mahomes is going to be the guy. There were legitimate concerns about him. I think, likewise, you have some legitimate concerns about Caleb Williams. It's just, this is the time of year when I think people love to just start to write things in stone and say generational, like it's no big deal and all of that. Just like Trevor Lawrence was a generational prospect for 3 years. When in reality, like, you go back and you watch some of the evaluators or some of the people like Kurt Warner, who's not like a big time evaluator or something, we're looking at it and saying, like, well, I mean, really? Mm-hmm. Okay, I guess, if that's what you're saying. All right.
Yep. The thing I always say about these quarterbacks, Seth, they get drafted really high, because typically they come from teams that achieved a lot of successes. How are they going to handle losing? How are they going to handle losing more games in September than they lost the last 2 years at Alabama or Ohio State or USC or whatever it is they went? We actually have answers about that on Caleb Williams. I don't know that he handled losing all that great this year when he was you know, getting, I poke fun at the crying on his mom's shoulder thing or whatever, but like, but he also skipped the press conference because he didn't want to face the media after that, you know, like that, just stuff like that. Like, dude, the Chicago media ain't soft, especially when it comes to football of all the sports, you know, like I have questions about that. I'm not saying like, I'm not saying he's going to be a bust. I'm just saying, I don't think he's the cash money lock to be good that everybody thinks he is.
I think when it comes to, you know, like our listener was saying, you know, you can find out who the alpha is or what have you. The thing about guys who have started a lot of games in college is they've had plenty of opportunities to show whether or not they're the alpha. And it's a lot tougher when you're losing, but I think they probably like that Caleb Williams has been through that adversity. When it comes to skipping the press conferences, I know that seems like, and you want to, like, your knee-jerk reaction, I think, for most people is like, yeah, screw the media anyway. And I get that. I totally understand that. But when teams look at it and they realize that, like, no, in the NFL, whether you think it's right or not, the quarterback has to go to the podium. Like, after the game and then at least once a week, the quarterback's going to be there representing his team. And they'd like to – they wish – much more so than seeing how he interacts with three other quarterbacks in a room. They'd like to see how he handles those responsibilities after losses and in tough moments. And there's some things that he hasn't handled the way that he'll have to handle in the NFL. And I think that gives some people pause.
That gives me pause for sure. I'll give Bryce Young a lot of, you know, I won't give him much credit for how he played this year, but I watched a lot of his press conferences after games because I'm generally, I'm curious to see how the Bryce Young, CJ Stroud thing eventually plays out. I thought he handled the losing really well. I know that's faint praise. You know, you're losing. But I'll give Bryce Young credit. Like, he never pointed fingers. He never skipped out. He never got truculent with the media or anything like that. I don't know how Caleb Williams is going to do with that in Chicago.
Tepper had promised him a slushie if he was good at press conferences.
Slurpee. Cherry Coke Slurpee, the best. All right. The perception about Stephon Diggs being a diva. Nick Caserio was asked about that yesterday. We will have Caserio, and he was also asked about what they did with Stephon Diggs' contract as well. The Diggs stuff was very interesting yesterday with the Texans GM, and we'll get to that coming up next.